The Pat Kenny Show
with Aviva Insurance
on News Talk.
As the ceasefire between Israel and Iran appears to hold, what has that 12-day war between the two countries done for Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu's political stock in his country? It's been almost 30 years since his first stint of three as Prime Minister, and he still stands to this day as a central figure in Israel and its politics. Joining us now to look a little bit more at where he stands as Prime Minister and what the future may hold after the ceasefire with Iran is Mitchell Barak, a pollster and strategic communicator and former aide to Benjamin Netanyahu. Good morning and welcome.
Well, thank you. Good morning to you and to the people of Ireland.
Now, let's talk first of all about the ceasefire. Is it likely to hold? Because President Trump made his displeasure clear with the breaches, the early breaches in the ceasefire.
Well, we're in a new world, I think, here, both in Israel and elsewhere. And whatever President Trump says is what goes, meaning from January 20th, Israel doesn't really have an independent foreign policy. President Trump asks, President Trump gets. You don't want to get that guy angry.
So you know Benjamin Netanyahu very well. What do you think his reaction would have been when Trump used an expletive referring to the breaches?
Well, let's look at what let's just take the same words in the same White House lawn and say, what would happen if Joe Biden said something like that? Joe Biden said things that were, you know, much less harsh. And they got wall-to-wall condemnation by Netanyahu, by Israeli ministers, by all sorts of people. Now there's total silence.
But there would be a calculation that there's no way that Donald Trump would ever walk away from Israel. Or would he ever think of limiting the supply of arms to Israel?
Again, we're in a phase where President Trump has said many times that he will do what's in the best interest of the United States. Now, at this point, and has been for the past number of decades, what's in the best interest of the United States is also in the best interest of Israel, including Israel's security, regional security, the same, you know, death to America, death to Israel chants from the Islamic Republic of Iran. We're in this together. So, you know, from that point of view, I don't think that President Trump will ever, you know, compromise Israel's security, just like the last three or four or five presidents didn't do that either. I don't think that that's going to change.
Would Netanyahu's own attitude want to, if you like, finish the job in Iran? I mean, he's made no secret about his desire for regime change. Trump seems to equivocate. One day it's regime change. Then those around him suggest that's not maybe the best thing to be saying out loud. So what about Netanyahu? Would he want to continue the job?
Well, I think continuing the job means absolutely obliterating their nuclear capability, their desire to produce a nuclear weapon, as well as making sure that the Iranian Revolutionary Guards, which are defined by most country as a terrorist organization, are wiped out. And I think we saw some of the last attacks by Israel against the Iranian Revolutionary Guard, as well as blowing up the prisons to let out some of the political prisoners. I think everyone, we're missing a great opportunity here to actually free the country for the Iranian people. The country is an oppressive regime. It violates the human rights and the basic rights of the citizens, the 90 million people that live there. It is called the Islamic Republic of Iran. It has taken Islam and made it into a terror weapon in order to wipe out the Jewish people in the state of Israel. And it shouldn't be tolerated by any, you know, democratic or normal country.
Would you say, therefore, that Netanyahu is frustrated by Trump's current attitude?
Well, I think many people are frustrated that we couldn't continue and finish the job, or that the United States didn't come in and continue, because basically the United States, you know, used the B-2 bombers for one attack. At the same time, we were exacting a great cost, a great human cost. Buildings were demolished. 10,000 Israelis are homeless right now, are out of their homes because they can't return. 29 Israelis have been killed. That's a serious price that we've paid, and they've been able to accomplish that. So for all our talk of success, and I believe that Israel has achieved great success, and many people in the world recognize that, it doesn't come without a price.
Do Israelis ever compare what's happening in Gaza, inflicted by the IDF, with what the Iranians have managed to do to Israel itself in the destruction of buildings and the loss of some human life, but nothing in comparison numerically to what's happening in Gaza?
Réan dul chun cinn an tagrísú, tá sé an am déit tús áite a thuairt don Israacht le chéim iarchéime ag gulscoil limní. Cé é acu ar mian leat cur le dhéis sin a gcarama, nó athrú chuig garam nua, tá chlár iarchéime lánaimseartha, páirtaimseartha agus ghearchlár ag ollscoil limní, tá cheapa chun tú a chur ar bhóthar an phasa. Bí fiosrach ag ul.ie.
Right. It's also, it sounds really nice when you say it, like we could compare these things. But the fact of the matter is that the Iranians target hospitals, they target civilian centers, they target neighborhoods. And we in Israel are in Gaza both to free the hostages that are still there. There's 50 now. They took 250 in the beginning. And we're fighting the Hamas, the Islamic Resistance Movement, the Hamas. We're fighting against terrorists. The Gazan people, after Israel withdrew from Gaza in 2005, they had a very fair and free election in 2006, and they elected the Hamas to govern them in Gaza. This is the government they elected. This is what they've decided to do. And from 2006 to 2023, you would think that that government would try and feed, educate, build the economy of Gaza, but instead they put all of their effort and all of their brain power into finding better ways to kill Israelis, better ways to try and obliterate the state of Israel. And in fact, they built probably 300 kilometers of tunnels, meaning that's a long enough tunnel, by the way, to get from Dublin to Manchester, England. You could have a tunnel that distance. And in that tunnel, you could probably fit easily a million people. Why is it that they didn't open any of their tunnels to protect their people from the Israeli attacks? You know why? Because they want their people to be killed, and they couldn't care less. The higher the numbers, the better their case internationally. And in fact, the more sympathy they'll get from countries like Ireland.
So,
And questions
I'm just
like
wondering
yours.
why, therefore, does Israel, if that's your view, offer them these propaganda coups by killing so many Palestinians and therefore moving world sympathy towards the Palestinians and away from Israel? And the sympathy of the world was definitively with Israel on October the 7th and immediately thereafter.
Right. Well, if Israel wanted to do that, Israel wouldn't send flyers and text messages to people and tell them what neighborhoods to get out of. Meaning, when we do that, and we do that in almost every neighborhood where we feel there are terrorists underground, above ground, hiding under hospitals, we wouldn't be doing that. We would take the risk and say, you know what? Some civilians have to be killed because we know the terrorists are there. When we send out those text messages and we drop those flyers, we know that the terrorists read them also. That the
Now,
Hamas reads them also, and then they leave. So the idea is to minimize civilian casualties while at the same time fighting the terrorists and killing the terrorists. Unfortunately, we've chosen, we've cho not unfortunately, as part of who we are, we've chosen to, not be as effective or successful in killing terrorists in order to save the civilian population. But
but.
that's the way it is. And by the way, of those 50,000 people that the Hamas Ministry of Health likes to report, at least half of them, or 30 to 40% of them, are actual terrorists. They're actually males between the ages of 14 and 45.
But even if you accept that the numbers may be slightly overestimated by the Ministry of Health in Gaza, and if you accept that half of them could indeed be militant members of Hamas, it leaves 25,000 or thereabouts ordinary citizens, men, women, and children, who have no truck with Hamas and have never wanted to be governed in the way you outlined by Hamas. Well, they would prefer the money spent on schools and education and all the rest of it rather than on tunnels and rockets. But
probably many of them are victims, I would say. That's correct. Many of them are victims. At the same time, we've said from the beginning, from October 10th, from October 7th, release the hostages, lay down your arms, and all this can end. We still say it. But yet, yes, 2 days ago, there was an attack by Hamas against an armored personnel carrier that killed 7 Israeli soldiers. They're not giving up. They continue to fight. They want to prolong this fight. We're not going to give up and walk away and let them fire rockets at us and let them keep having our hostages. We're going to keep fighting. That's the way it is.
Now,
it's unfortunate.
Given that Trump has ambitions to get the Nobel Peace Prize and therefore he wants the talks with Iran to succeed and he's briefed Hegseth in that regard, is this going to stay Israel's hand for the foreseeable, for the rest of the Trump term, because he doesn't want to jeopardize that ambition?
We don't know, you know, what he wants to do and what he doesn't want to do. We do know that he came out with the Abraham Accords. And for all those years and decades that American leaders and Arab leaders and European leaders like, you know, Ireland and others said there can be no peace with Arab countries until there's a Palestinian state. Well, boo. It happened when Trump was president. The Abraham Accords, they signed. The largest number of flights every day out of Israel goes to Dubai. That will continue. And Steve Witkoff, President Trump's, you know, representative to the Middle East, has said that there's going to be an announcement of other countries joining the Abraham Accords. So that is a very positive goal of President Trump. And I think we will continue to see that.
Now, the political future of Benjamin Netanyahu, it may depend on the courts and so on, but how much political capital has he gained by the strikes on Iran?
Well, right now he's gained a lot. And then, you know, 5 hours later, there was a report that the Iranian, you know, nuclear program was only set back a few months. And then, of course, President Trump, you know, called back Israeli fighters the next day. So we didn't look like, you know, we were so in coordination. And then President Trump released the fact that there were Mossad operatives on the ground in Iran. That's pretty dangerous stuff. So, yeah, he's gained political capital. It's unlikely that his government will fall because someone in his current coalition will leave. But in Israel, there's, you know, tomorrow is a new crisis. Tomorrow is a new challenge. And it's hard to say, you know, in a week from now, what's going to be.
Might he make a run for the country and decide to have a snap election, however long that might actually take probably several months, in order to change the makeup of the current Israeli government?
Yeah, that's, you know, a snap election can be in 60 days. It's not wise to do that because when you roll the dice, you roll the dice. And in 60 days from now, even if he would do that, we don't even know what the main issues are in Israel. And, you know, he puts himself in a vulnerable position. And frankly, I worked for him in the early 1990s and 1991 and 92. For example, he was the deputy minister in the prime minister's office during the Gulf War. And then after the Gulf War, Yitzhak Shamir, the prime minister, was tremendously popular for not responding to the Iraqi Scuds and letting the U.S., you know, destroy Iraq and the danger. And he took a roll of the dice in November, and Shamir was out of office and Yitzhak Rabin took over.
So not worth the risk, you would think, at this stage.
Right.
Finally, I should ask you about Ireland's attitude to the occupied territories and the occupied territories bill that is going before our parliament, which would prevent the importation of goods manufactured by Israeli settlers in those occupied territories. You cavil with that.
Yeah, I mean, we can't stand people from Ireland. That's the truth. You have a history of anti-Semitism, you know, since the great, and we just had Bloomsday recently. I don't know how attitudes have changed over the last 80 or 100 years, but
I don't think
you know,
there's any evidence of major anti-Semitism in Ireland.
Yeah, you're,
there is a certainly protest.
This is what your parliament is focused on. Even after October 7th, when we had an existential threat, we have in the West Bank, have you come out, in Judea and Samaria and, tried to sanction Abu Mazen, who actually pays people a monthly salary based on how many Jewish Israelis they killed? Does that bother anyone there? No, because you're worried about
because
settlers.
If what happens when there's an illegal occupation of lands that were denoted to the Palestinians when they are taken over by Israeli settlers, there are certain risks attached to that, are there not?
Which illegal lands were taken over? Are you talking the 67 borders?
Well, the 67 borders were not the borders denoted in 1948 when the borders of Israel were established and Palestinians were to get a certain amount of their own land to be ruled by themselves.
Did they accept that in 48 or did they reject it?
They rejected it, of course, because they...
Well, you know what? Maybe it's time to grow up. When you reject something, you don't get a prize. And you want to know something?
They rejected it because they...
So wait a second. You're talking about from 1967, the borders. I can assure you, I'm going to tell you something shocking to you. There's a country right next to Israel, which Israel actually has relations with, that 70% of the population is Palestinians. Why do you think Palestinians on the east bank of the Jordan River should not have a right to elect a prime minister and govern themselves? Why is a Hashemite minority of 30% governing 70% of Palestinians? You know why? You don't care because it's not Jewish and they're not Israeli. You're concerned with justice. You're concerned with democracy when it's connected to Israel. When are you going to defend the millions of Palestinians in Jordan? When do they have a right to self-determination and democracy and not a monarchy which rules over them? Does that concern you?
No, I mean, I think you're kind of conflating a number of things, like a refugee population moves into a country and then has the right to govern that country. I can see why an existing population might have some issues with it. If you go to Dubai, the place that all the Israeli planes are flying into at the moment, there are, 4.5 million foreigners there and just a few tens of thousands of native Emiratis. Who runs the show? Is it the foreigners or is it the Emiratis? The answer is the Emiratis.
Because they've decided to come in. The Jordanians were the Hashemites took over there. And you know what? I can assure you, if the West Bank was still together with the East Bank and Jordan was in charge, none of those people would have any rights. And it wouldn't be 70% Palestinians. It would be 85 to 90% because that's how it works over there.
Yeah. Mitchell.
So they've been on a path of self-government. The problem is with the Palestinian Authority, and I congratulate Abu Mazen, who just began the 18th year of his four-year democratic term. That doesn't bother the people of Ireland. I didn't see a proclamation that the Palestinians should have democracy and should elect a leadership that doesn't support terror. This is just plain anti-Semitism. This is what you guys are focused on.
That's absolutely.
You know what? You want to be a positive force.
I think you're out of touch with political feeling here, because there is certainly sentiment anti the Israeli current government, which is not the same as being anti-Semitic. You have to be able to separate. There are loads of people.
I can separate it, but you're the first country with academic boycotts. You're the first country where we actually. Recalled our ambassador, because this is what you're exclusively focused on. Again, what have you called the Palestinian Authority out on? We have an agreement with them called the Oslo Accords in order to come to an agreement with them. But you want to supersede that. You want to recognize a virtual Palestinian state anywhere, nowhere, because you think that's going to help things. You want to help things? Come to the table. You've got a lot of experience in conflict resolution. Use it positively. Try and get the two sides together. Don't take sides and accuse people. That's not the way to go.
Mitchell Barak, pollster, strategic communicator, former aide to Benjamin Netanyahu. Thank you very much for joining us.
The Pat Kenny Show
with Aviva Insurance
on News Talk.